This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Yesterday was the official start of summer. It's also National Perennial Month, a time for flower gardeners to try new plants that will add color and texture to a landscape. And joining us with advice on gardens and landscaping and to answer your gardening questions are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Veteran to Farmer Training Program Manager Rob Lewis, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And David, Sarah, and Rob, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Good to see you. You know, as we're moving into this typical summer weather pattern, David, where you get these hot, humid days, and you also get these frequent heavy downpours, what should gardeners be doing at this point? How do you cope with the weather?
Well, you know, you work around it, and obviously you continue to weed as much as you can. This has just been great weather, all the moisture, and it's going to bring a lot of weeds up. And so I really find that any amount of weeding that you can do, just staying ahead of it, get the weeds while they're small. And even if you've only got 10, 15 minutes, it really can make a difference. And so I would, doing those things, mulching to keep, after you have it clean, go ahead and mulch those areas. And then one of the things that I think is really important is that we get into the season is just continue to plant. If the radishes are done right now, go ahead and clean that area out and replant to something else. Put squash in or beans in, or, you know, we've got a lot of growing season left. And so we need to just continue to monitor, plant, and it's obviously time. Tomatoes are growing like crazy right now, and of course, be staking those and tying them up, get them off the ground, and watch them for some diseases.
Yeah, that's a good point. With this hot, humid weather, this moist weather, Sarah, what do you have to be on the lookout for? Molds, fungus, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we've been seeing a little bit of leaf spot on some of our tomato plants. We've already had to do a slow-release fertilizer to some of our vegetables. We use the organic Nature Safe, which is a fish emulsion. So we use that. Just be very cautious, especially when we get hot, humid. Be cautious about any type of foliar fertilizer because it will cause burn, or even any insecticide, organic or synthetic, because it can also cause burn. This morning I saw some Japanese beetles out there. So those, you know, there are other things going on too. But those are some things today I just saw.
Mold, fungus, and bugs, oh my.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's just part of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Rob, what's your advice for gardeners this time of year?
Be patient and start planning. With gardening, to me, it always is a matter of being keeping 20% of your eye on what's going on right now and 80% of your mind of what's going to come up in the future. Like Dave was saying, you need to start worrying about your winter squash. We've got a lot of growing season ahead of you. You got winter squash. You got pumpkins. We're starting to seed in the greenhouse, starting to put in our fall brassicas already. So we're dreaming of fall even in the midst of summer.
Ah, Sarah, what are some good things to plant? What's on your list?
Well, today I just planted some pumpkins, gourds. Oh my!
Okay.
So we planted.
So you're following Rob's list there.
Yeah, and then
getting your fall stuff ready.
Lettuce was already bolting, so we've pulled that out. We're putting in some new lettuce in some shade areas, which we have that available. If not, you can use a shade cloth. And then we also are putting in some late tomatoes, so we put those in. And we'll put another row of – or we just planted last week some sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Bolting.
Yeah. Bolting of your greens, a lot of your leafy greens, when it just gets too hot or it just sends out a very thick flower stalk that will produce seed, which you don't want that for your leafy greens because you're harvesting the foliage. And then it turns your lettuce and your greens very bitter. We just harvest it, put it right in the compost, or if you have rabbits, chickens, things like that, feed it to them. And then we just go right back in, add a little bit more compost on top to top dress that, and then plant right back in there. You don't have to plant more cool season, especially in the summer. Just be very cautious of the temperatures. But in our garden, we are able to do that because we do have some shady areas.
513-419-7100 if you have any gardening questions you'd like to ask our panel. And we got an on Facebook from Chris, a garlic question, as he calls it. And he's wondering, now that the long-awaited harvest is at hand, what's the best way to determine if garlic bulbs are ready to dig up? And does the timing differ by variety? And does the type of soil influence the decision? So it's a three-part question. Rob, you want to tackle that?
I'll jump in. For us, harvesting garlic, when to harvest garlic, it's a lot like being a fortune teller.
Really?
It's all about reading the leaves.
Okay.
We tend to harvest when we have five or six upper leaves that are still green, but the rest of them are brown. They'll start the tip. The stalks will start the tip over a little bit. But you don't want to harvest too soon. You don't want to harvest too late, too soon. And obviously, it's have a low shelf life. The bulbs aren't fully formed. And if you harvest it too late, the heads will separate. So again, it's about noticing or paying particular attention to what you can see on top of that surface. And again, that's several lower leaves that are brown, and then maybe five or six upper leaves that are still green.
Does the timing differ by variety?
It does differ by variety between hardneck and softneck garlic.
You know, Mark, garlic is one of those things that a lot of people will say, well, I can buy that at the store so cheaply. Why should I bother planting it in my garden? But the stuff that you buy at the store is always usually from California. And what you can grow in your garden is some of the more pungent ones and some that have just incredible flavor. And I would encourage everybody to try it. And actually, we are pretty close. You know, garlic is usually planted in the fall of the year or late summer. So it's time to start looking at some catalogs. If you want to try that, go ahead and order some. And it's a lot of fun to have.
Yeah, well, we're talking about garlic. Can you eat the tops?
You can. You can eat the scape, the seed. You can do a lot of that. A whole thing is pretty much edible.
Now, the other part of Chris's question was the type of soil. Does that influence the decision on when to harvest?
You know, in Kentucky, we've just got really nice clay. And garlic seems to do – we usually will put it in somewhat of a raised bed.
Yeah, and if you're not using a fork to loosen up some of that soil to pull it out, a lot of times you'll pull away stalk and your garlic will stay below ground. So it's we try to even in Ohio, we don't have quite as much clay as I do south of the river there. We try to loosen everything up with a fork before we pull them out as well to make the transition easy.
And they're fairly easy and fun to grow. They are a little off the typical growing season, so you do have to plan that, because once you start harvesting, you'll have a bare area. So think about either putting a cover crop in, planning on doing that, or doing another late crop like we discussed previously. And usually you fertilize once, maybe twice. And there are some maggots that will get in there that will burrow themselves down in the cloves. But, you know, if you have good soil and you're keeping good soil health, that should reduce population of those.
Yeah.
And it repels vampires.
So I can harvest my garlic and then go ahead and plant my pumpkin seeds in that same bed?
Every time I take a crop out, though, I always like to put a little bit more compost over the top of it and work that in. And I think if you have it, I would certainly do that. I really like to do that more than I like to put new fertilizer down. I just soon put a little bit more organic matter, compost, and go from there. Mm-hmm.
513-419-7100 to join us, and Rick in Hillsborough joins us now. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I have a question about the Florida Weed Tomato Training Program. Just what type of plant spacing and how big the rebar and mechanics of doing it? Thank you.
Well, that's amazing. I just came from the field this morning doing that. And I, what we do is, you know, that was developed in Florida. And I bought 6-foot rebar just because I wanted the rebar to go in the ground a foot and have 5 foot above. And I did every other plant, and my plants were on a 28-inch spacing in the row. And I did every other plant. And then when you start, you you do your first string very close, you know, maybe up 5-6 inches, and that string should go in and out around each plant, not around each plant, but weaved in between the first plants, and then of course around each stake you wrap it and you make it tight, and you can just go on down the row. There is also it comes on a stick, and you can make a device that will actually help you feed the string through there, and it makes it just so much easier to go down a row with it.
Especially if you're by yourself. That's a when I'm doing it by myself, it ends up turning into the Florida shrug.
Yeah,
not the Florida
shrug. Yeah, it really does. We didn't have that this morning, and I wish we did. But yeah, you can
get
that
online.
What's the
advantage of doing it that way?
Oh, it's just you use less material. I mean, you're not having a stake at every plant, and it's just much simpler to do. It keeps the plants up, and if you've got a lot of plants, it's really a very simple system to use. And a lot of people will say, "Well, boy, I got to spend a lot of money on rebar," but just remember, rebar will last you 15, 20 years or more. And so I like it.
Again, 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, what are those on a tomato? Sometimes I've seen these like dark spots on the bottom. It's almost like it's rotting at the bottom. Is that like blossom? I think it's
blossom
and rot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's usually the first tomatoes that come on in the season, and it's due to a calcium deficiency, but it's not really because there's not enough calcium in the soil. It's an uneven supply of moisture, and the way I've combated that over the years is to mulch pretty heavily around my tomatoes. And, you know, we always say when you're mulching, no more than 2 to 3 inches. Well, with tomatoes, you can go much deeper than that if you got straw or whatever. And I really think mulching is the answer to combat it. And it's secondly, it's really the early tomatoes in the season that are most vulnerable to it. But boy, it's disappointing when you see the tomato and then it's just rotted on the bottom. But and a lot of people will use calcium nitrate as a fertilizer source. But generally, there's plenty of calcium in the soil.
And yeah, if you get your soil test, you'll notice that the calcium is in our native soil high, so you don't really need that. I also recommend just putting a rain gauge out in your garden, too, just to monitor your moisture level. And then also, just because it's disease, it's maybe not marketable, but still edible. So you can still eat that, just cut that right off and enjoy that tomato.
Okay, so it doesn't damage the tomato.
No, just cut that off, juice it or slice it, you know, whatever. And, you know, some tomatoes are more susceptible than others. So just be cautious of that. You know, read your magazines and the labels and things like that.
Okay. And we'll continue our gardening conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us with advice on gardens and landscaping and to answer your gardening questions are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Veteran to Farmer Training Program Manager Rob Lewis, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So we got to get some more details, don't we, Sarah, about this Florida weed for tomatoes?
Yeah, you know, I've been to the conferences, I've talked with farmers, and, you know, there's one way, this way, every which way. But, you know, so I was just conversing at break. What is it that Mr. Kester does over there in Boone County? You know,
so formal.
I know. So when you do your first weave, you know, and then you're as the obviously overnight, basically your tomato plant grows. Mm-hmm. Do you go back up and weave again? Some put just a straight line. Do you go up 8 inches?
I think we're going to continue to weave, go around.
And you can use that same tool.
Yeah. And it's – oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The tool just is
you fly.
Unbelievable how fast it is. And then secondly, you know, we're using plastic twine is what we use. I think you can use sisal twine as well if you want something that'll degrade. But both of those need to come out of the field because they will, you know, wrap around rototiller tines and everything else. But I just just it's really a pretty simple way. If you have a lot of tomatoes, I recommend it. It really has saved a lot of time.
It does alleviate, you know, when you're trying to get in trellises and pruning and harvesting it, accessibility and spraying. It just makes more sense. You know, I'd say, and even in an urban setting, if you have that, if you're wanting growing them more vertically up, to me, it makes more sense.
It's one of those things too with the Florida weave. Don't skimp on the type of twine that you buy or the type of string that you buy. You know, when you're going to do your Whole Food shopping, check go to Amazon and check out what they have in terms of tomato string and get tomato string. Don't right. Don't use the baling twine like I learned last year that and halfway through the season it all kind of comes crashing down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of tools for gardening, we've been asking listeners what their favorite tools are for gardening. We got a response from Karen who said a soil knife. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of your favorite tools, isn't it, Sarah?
Yes, and I found mine. I think last time when we were talking about it, I've misplaced it.
Oh,
and
no.
I know, and it's one
and
of—
you're lost without it.
And I was like, how am I supposed to do this? And so I did find it. So it was Christmas again. So
yeah, Karen says that she describes this as it's strong and it's sharp. It has inch markings embossed in the blade. Mm-hmm. She uses it for digging, weeding, planting, digging out dandelions, cutting open bags of mulch and soil, mm-hmm. dividing perennials, planting bulbs, and a million other things. Mm-hmm. it does sound like it's a very versatile
very handy.
Tool.
I wouldn't give it to a child because one side
right.
is serrated.
And it's a knife.
It is,
right.
yeah. And it is pointed, you know, so just be cautious of that.
Mark, a couple of years ago, I was at a convention and Earth Tools was there. And they had it was called a Czechoslovakian subsoiler. And it was just a pole, and it had a hook on the end of it. And I have raised beds, and I was able just to pull that through there without really disturbing the soil that much. But I broke that layer, the compacted layer, and it's really a fantastic little tool. I mean, it's very difficult to find, but it was called a Czechoslovakian subsoiler.
And since Rob is our new guy on the panel, what's your favorite tool, Rob? What's your favorite gardening item?
Favorite gardening item?
Any number of things,
so you
right?
You took the soil knife, so it's a little unfair.
Well, it does sound like it's a very, very versatile.
It's a fantastic tool. Like she was saying, it can be a little bit, it's looks like just a regular little spade, but it's got a lot of features to it. Well, you caught me by surprise there. I had to think about that one. I was in my mind. I was like, he's going to ask me. I'm going to say, it's my iPod because that's right. It's my iPhone. That's where I get all the answers for everything.
That's where I get all my information.
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps me entertained. I listen to WVXU. Yeah.
So, I have
that's
to say,
a good answer, by the way.
Sorry, thank you.
I have to say, lately, it's my sunglasses and my hat, too, because, you know, as I'm pulling weeds and things are just flying, bugs, debris. And so last year, I failed to put my sunglasses on and really hurt my eye. So just be cautious of that. I know it's simple, but, you know, it's maybe not a tool. But
last time we asked this question, Terry had sent us an email that we didn't have a chance to get to, but Terry said, I have an old mini-matic. And mm-hmm. you seem to know what this is, David.
Yeah, a matic is just the usual ones are about the size, the length of a sledgehammer, but it has, instead of having the head on it like that, it's flat, and it looks more like a hoe, but very thick steel on it, and you can actually, you know, take stumps out and things like that with it. And a shorter one would just be, you know, obviously a whole lot less weight, and you would be able to dig in the ground and plant things and, you know, have a multitude of uses.
Yeah, Terry describes this as one end opens up a transplant hole for mm-hmm. tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And the other is a fine dibble mm-hmm. that can be used to create a furrow for a row of beans. And that too sounds like it also has it's a very versatile tool. Terry also says plenty of strength to hack out stray saplings or do some edging.
Yeah. Thistle weeds would be a great thing. That would be wonderful to be able to get those out with.
Yeah. And then we had, Army surplus entrenching tool. I guess this is the short-handled pick and shovel combo. Somebody said this is a great way to work in the garden. tight areas. That was Pete who said that. Tight areas and getting through the hard clay and the rock soil that we have.
Yeah, that'd be a good tool.
Yeah, and I guess you could pick that up in an Army surplus store or maybe even a library store.
A lot cheaper than going online to buy a very expensive catalog company for something that's similar.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Elon in Anderson Township. Hi, how are you today?
Hey, Mark. I'm doing great. Hey, I had a question about another good tool. I just don't have a backyard compost system going, and I wonder if anywhere in Cincinnati that someone has really rich, good compost that they would just sell to me.
Boy, there's a multitude of places. We have gotten it from Hafner at the Campbell County Extension Office, and Evans has a material that's blended. I think you can find it around. It's the issue is that you need something to haul it in, or you're going to have it delivered. So a pickup truck, something like that, is pretty handy to have.
And I know Evans, we got their mushroom compost. And that is really good stuff. There's a few florists in town that Fort Thomas, for example, they get the leaves from the city that they dump and then they compost it. They actually steam it and they turn it over. So and then they add some other organic material in there. So I would always ask, side of caution, when someone says I have free manure to give you, just maybe go visit it, smell it. I know that's weird and kind of creepy, but smell it because if it smells really bad and you can actually see the shapes of the product that's not composted, always, you know, it wouldn't hurt to get it tested for soil nutrition because, you know, that stuff could be really high in nitrogen. So, yeah.
And any advice, Rob, for finding compost?
I think Bizak, Hafner, Evans, all those folks are great. And the delivery charges aren't too terrible, especially when you're ordering in bulk.
Mm-hmm. And Turfway sometimes, you know, you can, depending upon their racing schedule, homeowners can go there and pick up with a scoop of their material. And they actually do a very good job at actually turning and managing their system.
513-419-7100. Tina in Montgomery joins us. Hi, Tina.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question. I have a vegetable garden in a container on our patio. It's a large container. It's about 2x4. And my kids put in some watermelon seeds, and we're starting to grow watermelon in our container. I was calling to see if there's a way to get them to grow off of the ground. And if they can grow up, and then if so, what do we do when, or if, we get fruit on the vines?
You can definitely grow them vertically. You'll make some little hammocks with some T-shirts, or I know of a gardener who used pantyhose, just made a little cradle for them. You can do that.
Do you know what variety it is?
Yeah, because they can be really big.
I'm hoping it's a small one.
Well, we don't have any fruit yet, but the vines are starting to come out, and they look like normal size.
Yeah, but there's Sugar Baby, and there's some smaller ones. I'm just worried that this is one of those really large fruited ones that it's going to be really tough to put that on a trellis or even, you know, keep it on any kind of a support system.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about too. Should I transplant it?
I don't know. I know. Is there any way you can let it come off of the container and run on the patio?
Yes. Would it do that?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And that would be a better way to do it.
You have no weeds to control, so that would be great.
Yeah. Okay. I'll try that.
It's going to be a lot of fun for your kids to watch that.
I hope so. I hope they can let it grow long enough before they pick it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tina. We appreciate the call. We had a comment from Susan, actually a question from Susan, and we'd been talking about getting rid of thistle a couple comments ago. She's wondering how do you get rid of Canadian thistle? She's got some problems with that.
Work, work, work. Sarah and I work, you know, and obviously there are chemicals that will do that. And the glyphosate, you can paint that on the foliage a little bit, and it will translocate throughout the plant and kill the root system. Digging it out, of course, I would really try to do it when it's young and actively growing. That's when you really want to try whichever control method that you use. And whatever you do, don't let it go to seed.
Yeah. And then if you're getting compost, you know, keep an eye on, you know, what weeds are around the landscape or nursery or the farm. Because if they have Canadian thistle, for example, those seeds are probably going to be in that compost.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us with any questions about gardening or landscaping. Also, let's see here. Let's go to Pat in Anderson. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. We have been gardening on either side of our house for years and years and years, and very successfully, always growing great yellow beans and green beans and tomatoes and eggplant and peppers and everything. But this year, we've got rabbits, and the rabbits have eaten all of our, actually, they've eaten petunias as well as all of the beans. And so we're going to have to pull the beans out and try again, but the rabbits are still here. We just saw them this morning. We got a large raccoon, too. But anyhow, we have a hard traps. We're trying to be nice, but we need to figure out how to handle this problem.
You know, chicken wire fencing for the rabbits really is effective. It's got to go all the way to the ground. Rabbits are not great leapers, but they can dig a little bit. So you've got to get it pretty close to the ground and maybe, you know, up at least 2 foot, 2.5 foot would be better. Raccoons, I have no idea how you're going to do that because they are smarter than we are, I'm sure. And they are really tough to combat. And they will wait, of course, until things are ripening and at their peak. But the rabbits, I think you can control those with just some chicken wire fencing. And there are some repellents. They have to be reapplied all the time, and I don't think they're that effective for rabbits. The raccoons, there's just I'm not aware of any repellents other than eradication.
Yeah, 12 gauge, I think, yeah, is usually the repellent of choice for a raccoon. And speaking of which, you might want to make sure that you're checking with the local laws about relocating, even with us have a hard traps, relocating animals that that find their way into your traps. And there's another with rabbits. We've had some success in my home garden, at least. We don't use it at Turner because we're certified organic. But in my home garden, we use liquid fence, which smells like garlic, rotten eggs, and death all mixed together. And you spray it around there, and it will keep
sounds
away.
Sounds like it'll keep a lot of things away.
It keeps a lot of things away. It keeps my wife away from the garden. It keeps my kids away. But yeah, it once it gets warm, it smells pretty nasty on a warm summer's day.
Let's talk to Paula in Westside. Hi, Paula.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Two questions. I have grown tomatoes for about 40 years, and I grow all of mine from seed and they're all heirloom. And this year I noticed, and I've never had this, very strange-looking blossoms on maybe 10 of my 30 plants. And I looked it up on the Internet, and they're calling them mega blossoms, and they didn't give a reason of why that occurs or what happens with the tomato or will the tomato be normal. So I was wondering if you had any insight about that.
Boy, I have not heard that. We've got some heirlooms out at this demonstration plot we're doing, and I have noticed that some of them have a much different bloom than what I'm familiar with. And I know it may be that, but some of this is more like a star-shaped bloom, and it's much larger than the others. And it is strictly on the heirlooms that we have out there, or just actually it's just on one heirloom that we have. And I don't know whether that it's just particular to that variety or what it is.
I don't know.
We're all three shaking our heads here. Listen,
yeah.
You stumped us. Nice job.
Beth, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk to Rob in Finneytown. Hi, Rob. Oops, my apology. Beth in Western Hills. Let's go to Beth in Western Hills. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. I have a quick question. I have a bunch of black-eyed Susans throughout my yard, and not one of them are budding. And I don't know if it's just too soon for black-eyed Susans, but I don't see any bud. And the deer get at them all the time, but they are, there's no buds.
Well, I think you've answered it.
Yeah, I would, why don't you try to, if you could, I mean, the deer damage ought to be very noticeable. I mean, you should be able to see where they have clipped off the tops of them. And if they, you know, if you're not getting any kind of bud on there, then they're obviously doing that. But I can think of no other reason.
Sunlight, those, maybe, yeah, as long as they're getting their, yeah, they like that sun.
Those plants are just so prolific and durable that it's got to be something's taking off the tops. And just give it some time. You know, it they may be a little bit slow this year. And I think with time, you're going to see that you're going to have abundant bloom.
Beth, thank you for the call. We will continue our gardening conversation and answer your questions, 513-419-7100, if you'd like to join us. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us with advice on gardens and landscaping and to answer your gardening questions, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Veteran to Farmer Training Program Manager Rob Lewis, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk to Rob. Hi, Rob.
Hello. I have a question. You were talking about the composting before, and I go up to Parkey's Farm, and there's free horse manure up there. You were mentioning that it's good to have the manure sort of like, you don't want to, I guess, see it as in its form anymore. But I was, so what I normally do is get, you know, mix that with leaves in the fall and let it kind of sit all winter and then throw it in the garden. Is that a good idea?
Absolutely. That's perfect.
You know, stumped on this one, are we?
No.
Yeah. Okay. 120 days is what they recommend on fresh manure before you grow, plant into it. So you put that on in the fall of the year, you're perfect.
Rob, thanks for the call. Let's talk to Natasha in Green Hills. Hi, Natasha.
Hi there. I recently moved from an apartment in Milford over to Green Hills, and when I did, I took my lemon mint out of the ground and I put it in a pot, and it now sits on our deck in the back in the pot, and it's not doing so hot. Like, there's barely any leaves. The ones that are kind of have brown spots. I don't know, like, did I severely injure it, or can it come back? What do I do?
And you said lemon mint, correct?
Yes.
So
did. Yeah, it the person who gave it to us said it was lemon. It's got leaves like mint, but smells like lemon when you rub the leaves. It may be like a lemon balm or so.
Yeah, so lemon mint, it's pretty tough. Now, there are other lemon, like lemon thyme, lemon balm, but anytime you have yellow, it's a response to chlorosis, for example, so it needs a little nitrogen. But if you're transplanting it, sometimes some of our plants do the transplant shock and they can show those symptoms. So if you're seeing any browning on the tips, I would cut those back, kind of reduce any leaf surface so it can kind of put all the energy in the root system, and then maybe do a light feeding of some slow release fertilizer to help with that. So the first number and the 3-digit fertilizer ratio is nitrogen. Just do a slow release, a small amount, and it should bounce back. And you don't want your herbs to go to flower. So just keep that in mind as well. But I would just give it a nice haircut. And drainage as well. So when you put it in a container, always make sure that there are drainage holes. And when you're watering, make sure you're watering until the water comes out at the bottom, because you really want to let that whole soil surface area fill up with water, and you want it to drain thoroughly out. Holding water at the bottom can cause root decay and create habitat for gnats, flies, things like that, mosquitoes. So we don't want that. So overall, I think you'll be fine as long as you just do those few simple steps.
Let's talk to Jeremy and Harrison. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello. Yes, I have a plant in the corner of my house that has some
sharp fern-like leaves at the bottom, and it has a long stalk that when it blooms, it kind of looks like an asparagus. And my wife doesn't like it, so I've dug it up 2 years in a row, and it keeps coming back. And when I dig it up, it also, like, is a home for ants. And I have yet to be able to remove this from the house.
So it's not asparagus.
Boy, I don't know what it is, but again,
it's persistent.
Yeah, and it's
it wants to be there.
It's got a root system on it that it's obviously going to keep coming back. I really think if you continue to cut it off at the top, you're going to eventually starve it out. However, one of the things that you can always do if it's outside is go ahead and use a little bit of glyphosate Roundup on the foliage of it as it's actively growing, and that will move throughout the plant and kill everything. But be very careful when you use that, because it will have the same effect on your desirable shrubs and everything else that it does on this plant.
Or you can, you know, in combination or just singly, you can, you know, cut it down and then tarp it over with something black, like a black, and try to suffocate that. But also keep in mind, you don't want to create habitat for wildlife. So you really have to use landscape staples, is what they're called, anchors down into the ground, and make sure that it's any hole that may come up, a seed will find its way, a weed seed. So that's one way. And that will really warm up that soil. It doesn't kill the root. It just kills any plant life. And therefore, over time, will reduce photosynthesis and kind of starve out the plant.
Hey, he brought up another interesting point. Do certain plants attract ants?
Soil.
Has to do with the soil.
But
if there's if there's something sweet, exudate, there's an old story that, you know, peonies won't bloom until the ants crawl over them, and the ants are there getting the honeydew off of them and things like that, and that's not true. But ants are attracted to sweet, as just about everything else is, your insects.
Jean Ann from Facebook had a question. Front lawn full of weeds and clover. What's the best way to get rid of that and improve the lawn? And no, she does not want to have to resod the entire lawn.
I like clover.
I love clover.
So
we have sheep, so we got to say we love clover at the farm.
David?
First of all, I'd live with it for right now and wait till fall. And this fall, you can do some things that will hopefully get you back to just turf. I think if you have small children, having clover in your yard can be a problem because it attracts bees. And if they're running barefoot, not the best thing in the world to have. But this fall would give you a better opportunity to renovate. I'm not talking about killing everything, but and you can, you know, there are herbicides that you could use now. But again, I think you're better off going into late August and then renting a dethatching machine or a slit seeder and really trying to put some new seed in there and get that in contact with the soil and fertilizing at that time. What your goal is to create a really thick turf so that it crowds out the clover and crowds out the weeds. And if you can do that over time, I know how expensive sod is, and I wouldn't recommend that to you. But seeding in the fall gives you the best opportunity.
Yeah. I'd say my experience, because I had to fight a lawn full of clover, and it took years, was what you're saying, David, just reseeding, aerating.
Right. Aerating
in the fall as well, doing both those things, but it takes several years of doing this before you get much way of results.
Do that in combination with seeding, the aeration, the slit seeding, all that is really beneficial.
And UK, University of Kentucky Extension, has a wonderful calendar, and it highlights of what you need to do at what time. So that's also very important, you know. Fertilizing at the wrong time now, for example, would not be beneficial, feed your lawn and not the weeds. Well, it's feeding anything. So that's not – and it also can cause burn. And also thinking, too, if in an area that grass is just not growing well, maybe more weeds are coming up. Well, think about the sun exposure of that landscape. So turf cool season grasses like our fescues, for example, they need sun. So if you have a large tree in your yard or a neighbor's yard, you know, if it's getting ample sunlight, then you may need to think about thinning that tree canopy or maybe creating a shade garden. But sometimes weeds will come. The soil is a great seed bank, and they'll come if the turf doesn't have the conditions that it needs to thrive.
Is there a certain type of grass seed that grows best in our area?
We have a list of that actually as well. At the University of Kentucky, they do trial studies. So there's a blend. You'll never get a monoculture type grass, meaning one seed. Type seed. So it's a blend. A fescue, for example, is a cool season, so it thrives in cooler temperatures. So once Kentucky, we start transitioning into these summer high temperatures, high humidity, it'll start browning out. That's normal. It's going dormant. It doesn't like the hot, whereas there are some warm season grasses that you – like zoysia grass, for example. You get those by plugs. Most people don't prefer that for a home lawn. There's different grasses for sports turf. So, yeah, reach out to the extension office, and we have a list, and then you can take that to your garden centers, farm supply stores, and buy a good blend.
513-419-7100, and let's talk to Jim, and I believe it's St. Leon, Indiana. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Go ahead with your question.
Got a big problem with the ground moles. Of course, I live in the country, but it seems like one particular area of the yard that I mow is just infested with them.
You must have good soil because they like a good high organic content soil because it's easier for them to dig in. But yeah, we've been dealing with moles for a long time. And the recommendation is trapping is actually pretty effective because you probably don't have as many moles as you think you do because one mole can do a lot of tunneling, and there are some repellents, and there is a product called Tomcat, which is a worm that has and you have to remember that a mole's diet, they're carnivores, so they eat earthworms and they eat grubs. They're not eating anything else but those kinds of things. And so this is just it looks like a fishing worm, an artificial worm, and then you put it in the tunnel, and the mole will come around and he will eat it and it will kill him.
And just be cautious if you have any dogs or any farm animals or children, things like that. So if you need to put barriers up if you choose to use that product, but just be cautious.
Again, 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join us, you can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Rob, I'm hoping you can straighten me out on this because I always have a hard time with this. Okay, it's National Perennial Month.
Mm.
And I think I finally have this straight. So perennials come up every year, and
every
annuals
year.
Only come up one time?
Mostly, yes.
Mostly,
absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely,
That's what always confuses me.
Yeah, that can happen, that kind of confusion. Yeah, it is National Perennial Month, so happy National Perennial Month to the four of you.
Yeah. So what are some good perennials?
Gosh, it depends on – I like to stagger our perennials so that we have an explosion of growth throughout the year. You can start with the Lenten roses that explode when the snow is still on the ground, and then you have asparagus that comes on early in spring, and that goes right on through black-eyed Susans and butterfly weed, of course, for the monarchs. With perennials at Turner Farm, we tend to plant perennials not only for food but also to make sure that our gardens are making noise. We like to have lots of pollinators out there.
I'd say echinacea for myself and ferns. I really like the foliage.
Yeah.
David. Iris, phlox, I don't know. I like the euchra. I don't know. There's just so many out there. And boy, you know, the people that are into perennials are really into perennials. And we have some great nurseries in this area that just really focus in on them and carry all the new ones. And, of course, there's a perennial plant of the year every year. And there's fantastic the garden centers just – and the garden centers, this is – you know, that is one thing that they will sell throughout the summer. So you can go to them, you know, at the beginning of the year you get your annuals and you plant those. But they will maintain their perennial plantings throughout the year, and you can go and buy those at any time throughout the summer.
So what's the big benefit? You're just guaranteeing yourself a lot of color year after year after year?
You are, and it's, you know, you're paying the cost one time. And what I think is really fun is if you have really good soil, you have to divide your perennials occasionally, and you can trade. You can, you know, somebody has something, you can dig yours. Hostas, of course, one of the ones that are traded frequently. But everybody, you know, has their favorites, and really fun to dig them and divide them and pass them around.
So, David, what events you have coming up in Boone County?
Well, this weekend, this Saturday, we have our farm tour. It's going to be focused on the northern end of the county, and then we will do that starting in the morning. And then in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, we will be at the Boone County Farmers Market, where we'll be grilling out, and the farmers will have a good supply of some of the early season things. You know, we are right on the edge now of probably about the 4th of July or so. You're going to start to see tomatoes coming in. You're going to start to see corn coming in. But we're still a little bit early for the most part for some of those things. But squash is available right now. So that's on the market. But it's a great time of year.
Sarah, what about in Campbell County?
This Saturday in Campbell County, we have our second annual open house from 10 to 2. So come out, free event. We'll have some farm animals. We'll be giving away some trees to plant in the fall, some tomatoes, and learning from our volunteers and our experts there in the garden, sampling, going into and able to sign up for some of our classes. We'll have some information about 4-H youth programming. So come out, check us out, 10 to 2 this Saturday, rain or shine. And then also July 15th is the Backyard Farm Tour in Campbell County. It's always a great event. It highlights a lot of part of the southern county of your traditional agriculture, as well as featuring some new gardens in more of the urban sectors of the county. So I'm really excited for that. Everybody always comes out, has a good time, learns something new. So those are two big events coming up in Campbell County.
Yeah. What about at Turner Farm, Rob?
At Turner Farm, we have a teaching kitchen that we opened up last fall that we just hired a new chef and culinary manager by the name of Stephanie Michalak, and she has taken over the educational programming of the kitchen. And she will be – we have a series of classes coming up that include eating for digestive health and bread making and several others. You could just check out our website and our social media when you have a chance.
Yeah, and real quickly, tell me about the program that you're involved in.
So I'm the manager of the Veteran to Farmer Training Program at Turner Farm, which offers an educational opportunity. It's a two-year program for military veterans who are interested in a career in organic agriculture. The first year they spend as an apprentice working with the garden crew. In the second year, they actually have their own space at Turner Farm that they get to manage, and it turns into more of a business incubator where they're still back with a paycheck, but at the same time are establishing their own business, their own brand, and kind of getting a little bit more experience. It's kind of like the second year is like being on your own with training wheels on, if you would.
Rob, Sarah, and David, thank you for joining us
this
afternoon.
Good to be here.
Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Veteran to Farmer Training Program Manager Rob Lewis, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Josh Alstro was the technical director. I'm Mark Caney.